So we want to thank everybody for being here this morning. We've been super excited to have this conversation. We're actually down here in Atlanta. We're just coming off a youth summit yesterday. So it was so interesting that you were speaking about, student voice. We got to hear a whole bunch of students' voices yesterday. And one voice in particular was one that we were like, we want to hear some more of that voice. So we actually went into the conference thinking like, oh my goodness, we're having this conversation today. We needed to have a student. We had a student who was going to do it. They kind of were not able to make it. And then we said, we'll find somebody tomorrow. So who do you think the first young person that we meet in the morning who had traveled an hour to get to the event was? It was none other than this young man, Marquise. So Marquise, we're going to let you, tell people who you are, what brought you out, and, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Jamal. So my name is Marquise Hill. I'm 17 years old. I mainly do motivational speaking, and I'm an author as well. I'm the author of my first book, You Have Genius, Ability Within You. And I'm working on my second book right now. It's going to be called It's a Good Day to Be Great. And alongside of that, I also have my own clothing brand. So with my clothing brand, like my long-term goal with that is the one that make it into a cartoon, which is about these like five different kids. They all have their own special genius. And they go to Genius Pilot Academy where they grow their genius and they saving the world using it. So that's where like the name of the brand came from. And that's where the whole concept of the brand is. And that's like the main things I do along the business side. I'm a student still. I'm in my junior year of high school, all A student. And I would just say like that's a little about me.
Okay. Well, thank you. And in addition to this young man, we're going to be hearing from today, we have none other than the revolutionary educator, Mr. Principal Amin Ra. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do, and why you do it, Ra?
Yes, sir. Hey, good morning, Black on Black Education. It's good to see y'all. Thank y'all for allowing me to share community with y'all. For those who don't know me, my name is Amin Ra. My first name is Amin, exactly like how you after you pray. I'm born and raised from Compton, California. I'm out here on the West Coast. And I was that one kid that didn't see the relevance in school. So I decided to open up my own school. So I opened up my own school about 5-6 years ago, a high school in Watts. If you know anything about the West Coast, Compton is the hub and Watts is the dub, So I opened up my school in Watts about 5 years ago. We yielded some great results, 100% graduation rate. Now we have another 100% graduation rate this year. Have 90% of our kids headed to four-year universities. Became an author, Amazon bestselling author called Revolutionary School Culture. And I go across the country helping school leaders revolutionize their school culture. But then I realized that there was still some problems within our system. So then I became an ed tech founder of an organization that's called K-12 Crypto, which allow kids to learn and earn cryptocurrency based off of metrics that they meet in school. So they'll be able to stake an NFT for over 12 years that will be used to fund their future for college, business, and life. So those are some of the things that we're doing to revolutionize the world.
Okay.
And so we kind of kick things off letting y'all know who our panelists are. But now it's time for us to introduce ourselves. My name is Eva Loren Jean Charles. Most people just call me Eva. I am the co-founder of Black on Black Education along with my dear old dad here. We started Black on Black Education in 2019 out of a commitment to recognizing that there's a much longer tradition of Black on Black education than there is of Black on Black crime. And there's a reality that we have always come into community to teach and learn, whether it's in the school building or outside of it. And so our passion and purpose is to make sure that we're inspiring students to be the creators of their own futures by advocating for student-led approaches to teaching and learning.
Yes, and Eva also is a
ninth grade economics teacher. Just in my spare time, I do that.
And I'm Jamal Thomas, again, co-founded with Eva Black on Black Ed. Member of my local school board. And the way I got into, the education outside of this company was I took a tour around the country. Like most of my career was selling telecommunications and cloud computing, a bunch of boring stuff that I grew to like hate. And as somebody who was not a great student growing up in school, I always wondered what could be done to make education better for folks like me who love learning, but who are not interested in what is being sold in the classroom. And so I took a tour around the country with this personal care brand. I was driving this tricked out RV. I went to over 250 high schools over the course of 2018 and 2019. The kids got their hairstyle, they got to play video games, they got free products and things to that effect. So, you know, it wasn't a educational tour, but I got to talk to students about, oh man, you know, what's your favorite class? And what do you like about school? What do you not like about school? And the number one thing that continued to come up was how bored kids were with the education system, and how they wanted to be able to do things that were more exciting, and how they wanted to learn more about video games, not just playing them, but how to make them. So it occurred to me that, you know, we could be a part of, you know, helping to figure out how to make sure that some of these things find their way into regular education. And talking to teachers during that period of time, they complained about testing regimes and how, you know, inflexible school could be because they felt they had to teach to the test in order for them to keep their jobs and things to that effect. So it's like, how do you start to solve these problems? So as part of Black on Black Education, we've talked to 80 or so. Well, we talked to way more than that, but just on the podcast, we've talked to 80 people. We've done a couple of virtual conferences where we bring people together to have this, what is the future of education and how do we create it? And so what we have come up with, and what we understand now, is that we actually have the answers. The answers exist. It's just, how do we actually scale them and develop them? So today we're going to talk a little bit about that. And as student voice being something that is extremely important to us, Marquise, I'm wondering, man, you're obviously an impressive young man. What was your educational experience like to get you to a point where you have so much ambition and you're doing so much at such a young age?
My educational experience, it was really good. Like in elementary school, school was real easy. It's like I just kind of like flew through that. And then middle school, I dedicated myself to like get all A's 3 years in a row. And that's because like I told my mom I was gonna make a commitment to like get all A's because she was like one of the first people in the family to go to school, finish school, get her degree. So I was like, you know, mom, I'm going to go to middle school, get all A's for you. So I made that happen. And then when I got into high school, making that transition, I started my business when I was in eighth grade, and making that transition into high school, and I started to get into my business a little more. I kind of started to see like the entrepreneurial side of things and business side of things, and you know, being a motivational speaker and getting to do certain things. And I was like, wait, a lot of these things that I'm learning in business right now, they're not even teaching in school. And you know, when I started to notice that, I was like, school, it became less interesting to me. And, you know, I was like, I really don't have an issue, you know, I don't have an issue with school necessarily, or the teachers or the classroom. But what we're learning is, it wasn't elevating me or making me better, right? And after I was exposed to just the outside things of business and certain books that I read, I was like, whoa, these are the books that school needs to be teaching us. Like I read this list of books that our literature teacher gave us, and they were so depressing. It was like all of these depressing books. I'm like, but if you go out and you give us like, let's just say a business book or a book that's gonna help us just become a better person, it's like, we'll be more interested. And I've still maintained, you know, good grades. Like I have a 3.9 GPA, but I just know that that was a big thing that I saw in school. And just my dedication to continue to be the best version of myself that I kept my grades up. But for a lot of my friends that saw that business side, a lot of them was just like, forget school. And I'm just going to do this for just go all in on this.
Right.
But yeah, I would say that was my educational journey. After I learned that business side of things, I was like, yeah, some of the things we're learning in school definitely has to be, you know, changed to help us become a better version of ourselves, you know, outside of the traditional education.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think like that makes me want to ask founding principal Ra, like when you hear a student coming from that perspective, and you know that your school is doing it so much differently and is thinking and engaging with students and really being intentional about what it looks like to engage students with the actual curriculum and content that they're learning. Just talk a little bit about how you prevent and or reinvigorate students who make their way to your school from falling into the trap of no longer finding school important because what they're learning, or no longer finding education important because what they're learning in school isn't important.
Yeah, you know, what Marquise was saying was something that tied to his dream. And a lot of times throughout our school system, you know, school begins to be a dream crusher. Because in a lot of instances, culture, the ability to dream, a kid's purpose is suppressed. Rather it be for standardized testing, rather it be for hyper accountability, rather it be for the lack of cultural responsiveness, all these ingredients put together in the school system, and it crushes a kid's dream. Think about most of us traditionally, right? We go through school and we'll say at the beginning, it's like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up, right? You know, Get their first grade and all these great dreams come. And then as the kid matriculates through school, you know, you start hearing the echoes of, well, you kind of got to be realistic. You kind of have to do these certain things. You have to kind of, you know, do what you have to do. Just go through it, right? And what Marquise was saying was like, yo, he had this deep passion. It was bottled up inside of him. And rather it be from his parents or through another network outside the school, he found that and he realized like, yo, there was a disconnection here. There was something that was happening in this other world that he was living that was igniting him, that wasn't igniting him in the school. Mm-hmm. What do we have to do as a leader, as a principal? I knew that I was him. I was that kid. I just didn't get it at 17. I was just hustling, just doing it to say, yo, forget the school. I'm just going to hustle. You know what I'm saying? And the streets taught me that, right? So understanding, and I didn't understand about FICO credit, none of that until 25. Like, so he's well ahead of the game. So what do you do as a leader? What do you do as an educator? What do you do as a system, right? Because what was it? There's a quote that says, you know, you never change the system by fighting the existing reality. The way to change it is by creating a new system to make the old system obsolete.
Right.
So for me as a principal, I said, yeah, we got to connect school to relevance. Like, what's the point? Like, for example, I'm serious. Like, what's the point of me learning this quadratic equation right now? Right? Like, we got to see the connection between this. But also, you know what this young brother also said, self-help books. But we also got to say, it took him having to go through these experiences for his light bulb to go off. For education is, how do we get every kid to feel like somebody, but for their light bulb to go off? I echo this all the time. You know, we have to teach kids how to dream, but not only how to dream, how to execute on their dream. Right. Because one of my favorite books is called Chop Wood, Carry Water, right? It's about falling in love with the process of becoming great. And I've been saying this quote to myself, to my students, to everyone I come across. And it says, you know, any dream that's realized unpursued becomes your life's biggest regret. Right? So what does that mean? That means that, you know, if we don't teach our kids how to dream, they possibly go and live a life unhappy. And then they make a mistake, right? So I just say this, how do we do this? We do this through a process, right? A process is, first you gotta build relationships. You build relationships so you understand what is important and what is value for those young people. The next is you have to have relevance. Relevance in connection to pathways that allow kids to say, oh, this is my why. This is why to my existence here to add value to the world. And then last is the rigor, is the attention to detail. Whatever you find becomes so engraved in that profession, in that pathway, that you better your best each and every day, and you become the top in that industry. You know what I mean? So that's what we pursued at the U and the school that we opened, is we focused on love, we focused on passion, we focused on relationship, relevance, and rigor, and we yielded the results that we got.
Right. I mean, some of what you said there, Rob, makes me think just about, you know, what is education in the first place? Like, you know, when we think about the word, you know, some people feel like it's stuffing a bunch of things inside of a student's brain, when really it is, you know, it's lighting that fire, it's turning on that light bulb, it's finding out, you know, what we bring forth from the student, and how we do that, you know, on an more personalized and individual basis, which is not what our current system does. And so I'm going to stop there so that we can introduce the next gentleman who just joined us, Mr. Alfred Shivy Brooks. You know, please tell people who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Yeah. Can y'all hear me good?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, first off, pardon the tardiness. I have been like not using none of my Zoom equipment in so long. I was like, oh, wait, hold on. I got to reconnect. but thank y'all for having me and allowing me to be a part of this conversation. It feels good to see like familiar faces in the community here. My name is Alfred Shivy Brooks. I am a high school economics, personal finance, and government teacher in the Metro Atlanta area. I am a community leader, social justice advocate, entrepreneur, consultant, speaker, yada, 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 yada. The reason I do what I do is really to make our community a safer and more fertile place for Black babies to thrive. So in all spaces and all that I do, it's all about furthering the possibilities for our children. So, man, it's dope to be here because all the people I know who are in a part of this conversation, Ra, especially my brother from the West Coast, we all share a common direction and a common why. And we do that fearlessly and we do it on purpose. So that's why we're here.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so like connecting things back to the beginning and like why we're even having this conversation, it's speaks so beautifully from where Ra went with what we can't think about these little small tiny things about the system that currently exists that need to be changed, because then we're not going to get to the ultimate freedom dream, right? And so what does that look like for you all in connection to the conversation that we've had thus far and where we want to go? What is it that we want from education? What do we want education to look like? What do we want the core values of a public education system to look like for Black and Brown students? And so I just want to kind of ground that out for everybody to answer. What is our freedom dream for the education system as it relates to Black and Brown students?
You can start, Marquise.
Got you. In terms of what I would like to see implemented, definitely like self-help books. Let's say, for example, what's like a good start? For example, like if you were to say maybe Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? That was a great book. When I read it, I learned so much. I'm like, whoa, it just exposed me to a lot more. Another thing I would like to see implemented is like Mr. Ra was saying, pretty much connecting like relevance to the school system. So having things that we can relate to in the school system, meaning things that are going on in the real world, in the current world. Let's just say, for instance, like a class for social media, or like mm-hmm. a class for entrepreneurship. And I'm not saying like everybody's not going to be a business owner. Like everybody's not going to do all of these things, right, in the entrepreneurial field. But we can have like a class where we focus on whatever this kid's dream is, or at least have a pathway or an option for this kid to be like, okay, I can relate to that. This is something I'm truly passionate about, because I feel that these high school years are our most important years, right? And I know if I would have started learning a lot of the stuff I'm learning now in middle school, I would be 10 times farther ahead, right? So I think just like creating that relevance and creating those options and different pathways for kids to go into depending on their passion and what they feel their purpose is. Like I was saying, definitely self-help books. And I'm trying to think of like more things that we can like implement.
We can come back around with you. We'll come back around. But I love what you said there. You talked about dream, and it makes me think about something I often mention, is the idea of, you know, we have history class and we need it. But why don't we have future class? You know, why don't we start to talk about the various different emerging technologies that we know are going to be a part of changing society and putting students in a position where they start to dream and understand what these tools are, and they become creators and makers of the various different things. Like we we don't, our community does not have to continue to get left behind, but the system does have to adjust to be more, way more responsive to where things are absolutely going. Ryan, you wanna you know, freedom dream for us a little bit?
Yeah, you know, a lot of my work is tied to the intersection of trauma, wealth, and like actual intellect, right? And education. So when you talk about the future class, like we have to pursue what is the future of work, what's the future of learning, right? And a lot of it is tied to understanding, but many youth is understanding why things exist the way they are, why they do now. Right. I seen a brother in here had the 1619 project. Like I have it inked on me Sankofa. To know where you're going, you have to remember where you came from. Right. So if you don't know where you came from, there's no way that you know where you're going. And you know, there's no way that you understand why capitalism is thriving the way it is. Like for you to really deeply understand capitalism, you must understand colonialism. Like you have to, right? And if you don't, that means you're fragmented with understanding. Oh, damn, that's why the central banking system right there. Oh man, that's why JP Morgan Chase is also owners of the New York Fed. Oh man, I don't know the Federal Reserve Act. I don't know what happened in the panic in 1907. Why is the internet the way it is right now? Because now we have to study the history of the internet, right? So like when you think about the future class, it's like we're too busy still trying to, you know, we're still going and understanding how we got 1619, where we're going, colonialism and all that. But now there's this technological world of history that we have been like neglected out of, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we think about the history of the internet, 1983, right? We start this history of the internet, then phase two with social media and Pinterest and all this money making. And now we're in phase three, web three. And then a lot of people, because we're still trying to catch up, we're playing defense. We're like, wait, web what? Right? Web what? And then now you're seeing this whole world of crypto, technological advances, all these decoding, the universal language of technology is being built around, especially Black and Brown communities. And they're like, Sister wrote it, what was it? Black Appetite, White Food. And they're extracting that talent, monetizing that. And then now 15 years, we get the information. We're like, damn, what happened? No, we gotta hit the gas and learn how to, we have to be able to play offense. And Shivy said this about Thrive, like it's hard to thrive when you're just trying to survive, right? So in our educational system, many of our Black and Brown schools, we just trying to survive and we're not thriving. So many leaders are like, yo, I can't think about no future class. I'm just trying to survive with the kids I got, right? So now we gotta push it to the limit so we can be like, nah, the best defense right now is offense. You know what I'm saying? Because I was that one kid. It's like, yo, he says, you ain't teaching me how to get no money. I'm trying to get some money. Like, I'm trying to, so instead of that, I get on the street and I say, yo, I'm going to shoot dice. I'm going to go to the downtown, go snatch some change and go sell them at the school so I can get some money in my pocket. Versus now, all right, wait, I can learn about the stock market. I can learn how to buy low and sell high. I can learn and do it legally. I can learn different ways because now I can afford the time to dream. That's the difference between our Black and Brown communities, where somebody who's coming to play offense, they have the affordability to dream without the stress of survival. So how we do it, and we're thinking about the future of work, the future of learning, is how do we now put foundations in our school system, put foundations in our education that give students the affordability to dream? Because you know, kids coming from where I come from, we always suffer. Like, you got to work 10 times harder. You can't mess up. And now we suffer through perfectionism. Then by the time we hit seventh grade, we realize like, yo, this ain't for me. Let me survive in my circumstances now because I can't do all that. But, so we got to be able to change that.
This the part though. The educators who are in the classroom with them are also in survival.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? So it's hard for a teacher that's making 37, 40, maybe 50, $55,000 a year to teach a young person about thriving when they're living paycheck to paycheck, right? So to Marquise's point, when young people understand that the new economy is what it is, that there are no more gatekeepers, that it does not require a degree to make $100,000, not a year, but per month. Like, what are we telling them? So we're not actually preparing our young people for the economy that exists today.
Correct.
So when a child is in my econ class and I'm showing them how to move commerce and how to handle fulfillment and customer service, when I'm showing them the backside of a Shopify, right? when they're getting that kind of lesson, when they go into the other class and they're talking about things in theory, they're like, why? Because it's the theory and the proposition that maybe one day I'll make a bag, right? Mm-hmm. If I go to school, then I could work for somebody. But our young people are getting hip to the fact that their boss ain't never gonna pay them enough mm-hmm. to be their neighbor. They already know this. So they know that the system is set up for them not to thrive because they look at the lives of the people who are there educating them and seeing them struggle.
So can I jump in for a hot second? I don't know what the exact the formatting is, but I think Brother Shivey's point about teachers being in survival mode is shouldn't go unnoticed, because I think some of that survival is a keen understanding that a lot of the content that we teach is content that we're forced to teach, and that this conversation is not necessarily lost on them, but I'm forced to teach the quadratic equation, or I'm forced to have my students read the Scarlet Letter or the Red Badge of Courage, as opposed to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or The Richest Man in Babylon. So I think part of the conversation has to be like, how do we empower teachers to kind of disrupt so that we can say, you know, I have 13 Marquises in my classroom and we don't want to read the Scarlet Letter. I think it's bullshit also. And we're going to read The Richest Man in Babylon. Like, can you all talk about, because it's, like, having been a former principal and like being able to empower teachers to do that is a thing, but it's different when, you know, you have 25 kids who come to you at 6 or 7 different points a day, or you're an elementary teacher and it's like, this is what you have to do and we'll replace you if you don't do it.
Right. Like, Thank you, Desmond. So just moving forward, I appreciate it. Moving forward, we're going to keep everything, you know, with the panel. But does anybody want to, you know, touch on Desmond's point real quick?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. Yo, that's a leadership problem. You know what I mean? And let me explain why this is a leadership problem. Most of the struggles, and I'm going to keep it 100, most of the struggles we have in our school system is a leadership problem. They're so-called institutionalized thinking inside the box. They now live in that box. You know what I'm saying? They all in the box. So you said it, former principal. How do you inspire greatness from your teachers, right? How do you now empower teachers, say like, yo, no, cut that out. This is what I want from you, right? Because now it's hard to be what you can't see, because a lot of times I already know somebody in here is like, well, it's policy, it's this. Why do we continue to wait for people to dream for us? Mm. Why we continue, like we already know that they're not gonna dream for us. But we continue to say, well, are we gonna follow this? We gonna follow this. What happens if you don't, like really, what, listen, what really happens when you don't? A lot of times, if we get the results that we get, if you show that you are educating young people at a high level, it's hard to deny that. And at the end of the day, my boy Shivy said it, it's hard to be revolutionary and complicit at the same time. You can't sit here and say like, yo, I'm really here trying to change. And it's like, you know what? I guess you know what you producing is wrong. I had to make that decision. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember when I was first a teacher, I was like, you know, I got to do all this code switching. I got to be this. I got to be that for the system. I got to be this and that. Now, you know what? I surrendered the outcome and said, I'm going to teach young people the way I know and to be in my authentic way. So I would say this, you're absolutely right. Shivy's absolutely right. Man, our teachers are in full-fledged survival mode. You look at the wage, you look at inflation. Listen, this ain't nothing new. This is not nothing new. This has been a problem that is going to continue to be a problem because it is designed to be a problem, right? It's hard to revolutionize. When you're like, yo, I'm a teacher, I'm survival. I don't even know how to make generational wealth. I'm going to teach a kid how to make generational wealth, right? So we got to be able to put the tools also with educators and what we call revolutionary educators, who doesn't mean that you just have a teacher credential, because everybody on here is an educator in their own right. But now, how do we come together? Like, one of the Nguzo Saba principles is cooperative economics, right? Mm-hmm. Cooperative economics is like, how do we now put together these systems where now we can empower. Another one is collective work and responsibility. If everyone does a little, no one person has to do a lot. So how do we tap on the shoulder where I may not be the person that's giving the information, but I got a few guest speakers coming in giving them that smoke, right? So it's like, yo, I want to protect my job, but guess what? I got four or five people coming in teaching modules that will give them the smoke and say, yo, I didn't teach that those guest speakers taught that. So we can figure out how to do this. We cannot continue to say, oh, wait for policy. Man, them policy ain't gonna never get to the point where we want to get to in the time we want to get to it, because those lives are gonna be draining, drowning, waiting for government. Shout out, you know, my boy Shivy's in the government, you know, shout out to him. But like, we gonna be waiting forever. So I don't know if I answered your question, brother, but I just know I'm a person that we gotta figure out when there's a will, there's a way. And we can be creative with how do we provide information and education that liberate young people and the tools in which they need to build for themselves.
Absolutely. It seems like from what I'm hearing and from what I have learned from being in this space as a young educator with people who've like, y'all been in the game for years. And like, I'm learning that as I continue to move in the education space, there has to be a commitment to figuring where there's a will, there's a way, like figuring out how you get. So y'all told me I have to do a research project. You told me I have to teach children about supply and demand. You told me I have to do these three things, but what ways am I choosing to do that? What information am I choosing to engage them in? Am I going to put on the same a YouTube brain pop video that every other teacher is doing when they teach it? Or am I going to put on Earn Your Leisure's podcast? There's nothing in the policy that says I can't do that. There's nothing in the policy that says I can't engage students in conversations that are deeply entrenched in the content, but also are giving it to them from a culturally relevant stat away, right? The students know that this is the information that I was told to teach them, but I'm having someone who knows how to teach it better than I do, teach them in a way that's going to engage them and that is going to give them the step-by-steps to get to where they wanna go, even if that's not what was intended when the policy was put in place. How do you figure out the ways to fight the system within the system as an educator? And then we have so many of us who are working outside of the system to do the same thing. Like it's just been about, for me at least, figuring out how I do it. And then when the principal comes in the classroom, I got my lesson plan and all these, and this standard matches to that. You can't tell me I'm not doing what you asked me to do. You just mad that I'm doing it in a way that students are excited about, because now, when they, just like Shivy said earlier, when they go to all the other classes, they're upset about the theory that is being given in that space that's not allowing them to think about what their future could and should look like, and in the ways that the education system has been choosing not to teach them.
Yeah. I mean, you're making me want to actually dig in. And this is an area I would love to hear Shivy on, because, you know, we're talking about the inside game and the outside game, and how they kind of have to occur at the same time. And that outside game, a lot of the time, is charter schools, and it's you know, areas where they say there's potentially you can have more innovation, but then people talk about that's taking money out of the public education system. And so, you know, this argument has been going on for so very long. Shibby, do you want to touch on some of your thoughts on that and how that's going to relate to how we create the best possible system for the most possible people?
Yeah. Honestly, my perspective on charters is very nuanced, right? I think a lot of times we get into trouble because we look at everything in the binary. It's like I'm with it or I hate it, right? But, you know, I have a son that attends a charter school, right? And then I have another son that attends a straight, you know, regular private school. And so I see benefits in both. And I also see the issues with charter schools when you concentrate them in neighborhoods that look like ours, right? And you basically pull all the FTE or the student weight dollars away from the public school, and then you end up closing that school down. And then the charter school companies that manage them basically are running a real estate play many times, and they're charging that local school $1 million a year for the building, et cetera, et cetera. And then they decide later it's not profitable to be there, and they pull out, and now you don't have the neighborhood school or the charter school. So we see those type of problematic plays. And I think when you do charter with nonprofit management, when you do it when there is not a real estate play at hand, where that school's not having to pay $1 million, $2 million lease every year, I could rock with it. What I will say is this: In Georgia, my son's school, who goes to the charter, it would not exist if they did not make a law or several laws to create conditions for that school to happen, which were actually harmful. But what happened is some Black nonprofit school leaders came together to create a school. And so I see that as like a blueprint where we have these policies that will create, let's say, private school vouchers, right? Or create the lane for these public-private hybrid schools to exist, where we know it could be harmful for us, I think is an opportunity for us to take advantage. Go ahead and open those schools. Go ahead and be those ones where we create our own curriculum where we are not bound to what the state says we can or cannot do. Like, I think at this point, instead of fighting futile fights in places like a Georgia or a Louisiana or a Texas or a Virginia or a Florida, we need to now weaponize the policies that they are trying to use against us. Oh, okay, so I can unenroll from a class if I feel uncomfortable. Well, I feel uncomfortable learning about slave owners that you're calling forefathers. So I should be able to unenroll from the US history class, right? We should be teaching our young people that you can waive taking a standardized test. You are not required to take any standardized test, but we don't teach it, we don't coach it, we don't show the process of how to get the waiver, et cetera. So we need to start weaponizing the tools that are there, which are trying to be used against us until we beat them with it so bad, they decide, you know what? It's like melanin ballots. I don't wanna do that no more because I saw how that worked, right? So that's how I say we need to approach things like that until we start having the real conversation. I'm gonna end with this. Y'all, until we have a conversation about separating property taxes from how we fund schools, we ain't talking about nothing.
Yeah.
I don't hear nothing about DEI, I don't hear about equity, I don't hear nothing about SEL, I don't hear nothing about none of that until we have a real conversation about school funding, separating it from property taxes, so we can stop basically having this monetized segregation within our school districts.
I think we're gonna have to have a whole session. Like, we're gonna come back to you and say, all right, it's time to have that convo, and we're gonna get a couple people who are I mean, I don't know who's an expert on it, because I just don't see how I don't see how
an
I don't,
entire conference.
Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead.
No, you can make it happen. You just have to this is the real, man. We know it's not gonna happen. Right. We know it's not going to happen because this is how people lock wealth. This is our new form of like arranged marriage in America. Mm. Right. Like, my seeds marry your seeds. That's how we keep money in the family, what Jay say. Mm. Right. So if I keep wealthy families among wealthy families, then we continue to have wealthy communities. Right. And if we continue to have poor families among poor families, then you continue to have poor communities. And this is how you trap people to not have mixed income communities where we can thrive across financial brackets. But we're not going to see that, because that's the real inclusion. That's the real desegregation. Right. But we're not going to see that. But then also keep in mind, too, people, we got to stop telling our young people to get an education and move out of the hood. Mm. That's the other side. Right. Because a lot of our neighborhoods don't look like our neighborhoods no more, because we brain drain our communities. We tell our kids our community is not good enough to stay in, invest in, and make better. When I moved in my community here, people told me, why are you moving to Southeast Atlanta? Why are you moving to Grant Park? That's the hood. Now you can't move in my neighborhood for under $600,000. And I helped make that to be. So we have the power to do that when we stay vested in our community. But we also got to coach and teach the financial literacy, to Rob's point, and to Marquise's point. You know what I mean? We gotta put our young people on how we get it done. I'm a teacher that don't look like a teacher or move like a teacher.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
What is possible.
Right. Right. I love when a podcast happens and somebody slips in a little Wu-Tang in there, man. That's always awesome, bro. That's always awesome. So Marquise, man, in terms of young people, like, what do you feel like y'all responsibility is? What do you, when you look in the mirror and you think about, like, do you say to yourself that it's on me too to make things better? Like, do you look down at not down, but do you look at the kids who are coming up after you and young and say, yo, I have some responsibility to help make sure things are better for them? Did that make sense?
Yes, sir. I definitely see in terms of myself, when I look at the kids that are like younger than me, just like younger in high school, younger in middle school, a lot of them are just, they just don't know what's out there, right? And I think that was one of the biggest things that I think my responsibility is to show them what's out there at a young age, so they can be like, whoa, he's still in high school and he can do all of these things, and he's still in high school and he started his business. Oh, how can I do that? And I think that's a big responsibility that I've taken upon myself, to really just be, you know, the best that I can be and just learn as much as I can learn to instill in them. Because there's a lot of middle school students that always reach out to me asking like, yo, Marquise, how can I start a clothing brand, right? And I love to hear that, because they're so young. And then once you get to, let's just say, high school, now you have all of this experience in business, and it's like you're 10 steps ahead, right? And I think that's just been a big responsibility that I've taken upon myself, just to pass down what I know to the younger crowd, and to, you know, help them understand that there's possibility out here, like with TikTok, with Instagram, like don't waste your time on there, and you know, use it to your advantage, right? Like social media is one thing that literally changed my life. Like I got on TikTok and I had one of my motivational videos go viral, and it led me to so many opportunities. I'm talking TV, I'm talking brands reaching out for me to be an ambassador. Like, but kids have access to these things, but they don't understand the power that it holds. Right. Like they're still stuck in the consumer mindset, and they don't understand the business mindset and the ownership mindset. And that's one thing that I really want to instill in them. Like, I understand the business side of things. When I look at TikTok and I see all of these people with 1 million followers, and I'm like, okay, cool, you got 1 million followers, but are you monetizing it? Like, are you making the money you deserve to make, right? It's a lot of kids with influence and a lot of power in high school. Let's just say the popular kids in high school, they could be using their popularity to start their own brand, make their own money, or use their popularity to start their own business, get traction, right? But instead, they don't understand the business side of things, so they're missing out on a lot of paper, and they're missing out on putting themselves on, and then eventually their family on. So I think that's been one of my biggest responsibilities, just to pass down all of the knowledge I know now in business, and from what I'm learning from older mentors to my younger generation.
It's amazing, man. Yeah. Like, you are just, you know, wise beyond your years. And so, you know, like bottling and capturing, you know, some of what has occurred for you is what we have to do. And I love what's going on in the chat. Everybody, we absolutely are going to want to, you know, continue this conversation and you know, follow Pat Black. I'm like, and let's all of the things that you guys are mentioning, let's continue that. I want to go to Principal Rob, because one of the things, we got about, you know, 10 minutes left in terms of educational innovations. You know what I mean? When we think about the future, you know, K-12 crypto is one of the best innovations that I have, you know, had the experience to hear about. Can you share a little bit with people what you're doing with K-12 crypto?
Yeah, you know, tying to what Shivy said, what Marquise said, you know, what Shivy said, you know, don't move, improve, right? Like that's key. And what Marquise was saying, it's like, how do we take students from having a consumer mindset to a producer mindset? And what I found throughout working with schools across the country, again, is, you know, I feel like we can do a lot of innovations. Like if we look at this as a book, right, let's say it's a 12 chapter book. Chapter one is like, each chapter is like a grade level, right? But chapter 12 stays the same. Like chapter 1 through 11, we can do all this great stuff, but then chapter 12, the ending of the book stays the same. And what I mean by that is we are still breeding consumers in our educational system, especially in public education. No matter how you look at it, right? Like chapter 12 is, what do we try to breed them to? Go to college, and then the inflation in college is so crazy, right? Like think about it. Most kids go through public education and it's free. So it's free to learn. And then they get to senior year and it's like, you got to go. And they make the biggest financial decision of their life. Most of the kids coming from low income, they got to take a loan out because of financial aid just to go to that nice, prestigious college. And now you're looking at 28, 30. The data is clear. It takes about 5 years to graduate. Most Black students are graduating with an excess of $39,000 in student loan debt. So then you really look at, wait, I got to continue my education, I have to borrow to learn, to get a job, just to pay back what I borrowed to learn in the first place. So what I found was, yo, that's the intersection of wealth, privilege, and power in our country, right? Like that's the gatekeeping that has it. And then when we think about venture capital money, people don't know that college endowments use a big percentage of their money to flow into venture capital, which funds startup businesses, right? But only 1.7% of startup capital goes to Black founders. But yet we talk a lot about financial literacy, but we don't talk a lot about how to get the capital to start your own business. A lot of times we have to say, yo, you got to hustle, bootstrap different ways or go to the bank financing. There's a lot of money out here to start your ideas. So then that was the idea I had. I said, you know what? I was big in Web3. I said, what if we provide the students the opportunity to learn and earn? They earn money to learn and they don't get access to the money until they graduate. If you're like, wait, man, we don't supposed to be paying kids, man. They supposed to just learn for the love of learning. Well, I tell you, I challenge that when I say they're what they learn. If we're not teaching self-help, we're not teaching financial literacy, then I think it's unfair that that quality of life is dictated off of a miseducation of young people in our system. Mm. So I said, no, this study has happened with Dr. Roland Fryer from Harvard. From 2007 to 2009, he provided 38,000 students from New York, Detroit, Washington, DC, and Chicago, allowing them to earn money while they was in school. It showed it teased attendance, it teased critical hope, and it increased for them in their self-efficacy. It failed because it lacked scalability and it lacked people with philanthropy wanting to donate. But what if we made it in a system where we could, everyone can win, it's profit. And that's where crypto, DeFi, Web3 enters, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's shared ownership. It's the creator economy. For too much of our time, we have not looked at students as creators. We looked at them as the data points for the system to create wealth off of.
Right.
College Board makes $1 billion a year testing our kids. Mm. Avid makes over $100 million targeting first generation college students, which the data shows that is no increase or decrease is sustained when it comes to college graduation. $35 billion is used in our system to get a whole bunch of licenses for ed tech companies that nobody's using in our school system.
Right.
So what if we change the flow in regards of currency? There's a saying, if you change the currency, you change the world. So if we change the flow of currency, we will change the flow of critical hope, especially for young people that come from our community. So K-12 Crypto is a platform that allows kids to fund their future. And that's what we're building. And it starts in the fall.
Amazing. Amazing, man. We got about 5 minutes left. I don't know if there's anything you want to hit people with, but I want everybody to kind of get, you know, last opportunity to share exactly anything we've missed, as well as how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah. So I will just do a quick whip around, and anything that you want to kind of from this conversation in its totality, what are the things that you want people to leave with in two sentences or less, and then tell people exactly how they can reach out to you, because this conversation can't stop in this space. We all know it's going to continue. And those of us who are committed to seeing the future of education become what we know that it can be, particularly in the communities that we serve, we need to be in community outside of this particular space. So please, let's start out with Shivi and then go back around.
Thank you. I was trying to find the unmute button. y'all got me feeling like we back in the virtual school days right now. But no, I just really want to encourage all of the educators out there that you are still needed and required. I think we're at a time where we're seeing a mass exodus of educators leaving the field. I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't tussle with the idea of moving beyond the classroom. But I also understand the necessity, especially for myself as a Black male educator, to show up in the classroom and the benefit that we can be to our community just by being present. So to those of you who are on the fence, I really want you to think about your why, but also I want you to think more about your how. If we stay stuck on what we know education is offering or not giving us enough of, it will continue and always will be inadequate. But if we take more control of our outcomes, if we are more intentional about how we brand ourselves or market ourselves or curate and monetize our talents, we will be better educators for it. When we as educators can show up in the classroom, not stressed about how we're going to pay the bills or put the repair on the car or take care of that furnace that needs replacement in the house, we are better educators and better people for our young folks. So I encourage us to share in community and look at ways that we can amplify that together. And that way, we can help our young people see hope for the field themselves.
Thank you. So we actually have an 11:55 drop dead. So it's Ry, you want to just tell people how to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Principal Ry on all platforms. Follow K-12 Crypto and Revolutionary Education. And through community, we can make change all right now.
And Marquise?
You all can find me on social media at Real MJ Hill. That's R-E-A-L. MJ and then H-I-L-L. And my website is www.realmjhill.com. And then for my clothing brand, my clothing brand's website is www.geniuspilotacademy.com.
Okay. Okay. And we're putting all of the IGs in the chat. You can follow us at Black on Black Ed. Please, everybody who I'm going to try to download this chat because people, you know, talked about continuing the conversation. Let's talk about future class. Like, you know, this is a community and collective effort. And we need all the hands and help we can get. So we want to thank y'all for coming out today. We really appreciate, I appreciate your panelists, man. This has been a powerful conversation. I know it could go on and on, but they won't tell us that we don't want to get the hook. So thank you guys so much. We appreciate it. And, you know, until next week, speak.
Until next time. All right, y'all.
Peace out.
Have a great one.